Yeah. Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act the fool. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the Bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck, podcast ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man Old School with the What the Fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Fuck. It's What the Fuck. Yeah. It's What the Fuck. Yeah. It's What the Fuck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Fuck.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to What the Buck. I am Old School, coming to you live from Studio 76 in Valrico. We will be joined by Mark Cook 1970 on Twitter. That's Mark Cook of PewterReport.com. At about 9:15, he'll be calling in. I know that this is a kind of a bittersweet time, I think, for Bucks fans. We had a really good run. Sorry, I'm still getting adjusted back into the studio back here. I did the last show from my my niece's house, actually, up in Virginia. And if you guys were following on social media, you heard about the bullet holes and all the other shenanigans and hijinks. And if you're in the chat room, let me know if the audio levels are good, because I haven't been back here in a while. So, but I am back here in the studio, and we're deciding. I had some tweets tonight before the show asking if we're going to take a break in the off season like we did last year. And if I had to answer tonight, I'd say yes. I have to say the reality is that... Thank you, Spent. Hopefully those levels are a little bit better. I'll crank them up a little bit. The reality is, this season, despite having all of the fun and the success that we have had, has certainly also come with a price. And the price was an intellectual one. And that's kind of a weird thing to talk about, actually, to have an intellectual price for a podcaster. But it's been interesting that despite the success of our team ending in a winning season for the first time since 2010. There was a lot of brutal stuff that went on this year in the ecosystem, in the Buccaneers ecosystem. And we'll talk about some of that tonight. But the reality is, what I want to do tonight, and when we get Mark Cook on, what we'll do a lot of tonight, is talking about the team and what happened against Carolina, what we've seen developing throughout the year, what we see going into the offseason. Pewter Report put out their first mock draft. I believe it came out today. So we'll talk a little bit about that. You guys know I'm not a draft guy, so I always give credit to other folks who are draft guys. And so we'll talk about those things. We'll talk about the needs of the team. We'll also do a sort of a walk through the team, including the coaches, to talk about how we think that the team itself did. So before we get that stuff going, I'm welcoming you guys into the chat room. I see people are starting to file in now, which is great. I want to thank the people who've been with us all year from a sponsorship perspective. These guys deserve a special round of applause. And, you know, strictly speaking, and Mark talks about this sometimes when he talks about PewReport.com, they have a different model than we do. A lot of the other sites do. They have advertisers on their site that you need to click their ads. So I would encourage you, when you like someone's content, there was an interesting thread today with Stephen Holder in response to Richard Sherman's comments about websites and clickbait. And you guys know I've gotten embroiled in that discussion here locally. Websites, many of them anyway, stay alive through people clicking on advertisements. That's the way it works. Now, whether they get those people to get to the site through organic means or whether they bait them in there, really, that's a totally separate and distinct discussion. But Richard Sherman had a strong feeling. Stephen Holder, who used to be a reporter here locally, who was thought of very highly by many, including myself, brought up that journalists themselves, and I don't consider myself a journalist, I'm just a fan who does this stuff in his spare time, have a responsibility to call that shit out. And I think that they will. But the reality is our sponsors, our people that support us the way we do it at What the Buck, which, again, there's not one right way. They believe in what we do beyond the podcast, right? You guys have heard about it for years. You know about our charitable work through What the Buck Really Matters, our 501c3 operation. We've got the date for our golf tournament, which will be the third annual Trunk Slammers Invitational. It'll be right here in Valrico, Florida at River Hills Country Club, April 22nd. I will say that again throughout the broadcast. You'll be starting to see stuff about that. We'd love to have you out there for that event. All of the proceeds from that golf tournament go to the One Voice Foundation, which is for pediatric cancer research and advocacy. Last year we raised $26,000. The first year we raised $20,000. We're still trying to get to that $50,000 mark. But they believe in the tailgates that have thrown off, and I got some numbers for you today. Our tailgates throw off an average of $1,500 to a charity. So throughout the year we threw off roughly $12,000 to various charities. In that's just in cash, right? That's not including the donations and the time and all the other stuff. So they believe in what we do, and we couldn't do the things that we do without them. So Bill Curry Ford, that relationship has been amazing. Christy Vinette and the team over there have been awesome. They are our Tailgate and Platinum sponsor, and we could not do the things we do to the level that we do without them. So big shout-out to Christy and the whole team over there. Steakhouse Elite, our partners from the West Coast. Their Kobe-crafted beef keeps us happy, but their hearts keep us happier. So to Ty and the whole crew out there, thank you so much for being with us for so long and knowing that we can count on you. Tito's Vodka, keeping us happy during the sad times and, you know, happier during the happy times. Pepin Distributing with the Bud Light connection we had this year was phenomenal. Coca-Cola, those guys have all been absolutely phenomenal. I'd also like to send a special shout-out to our Patreons. There's a Patreon link. That's for people who, almost like a PBS thing, want to donate to keep our bills paid so that more of our funds can go towards the charities. So a big shout-out to Callum and to Doug, our primary Patreons. Thank you very much. Hopefully you guys got your packages. I appreciate all you guys did. We're going to try and make that a little bit better so they can be more well-used should we continue with that down the road. So big shout-out to all those guys. And a shout-out to Pewter Report. I mean, Mark hasn't called in yet, and I'll probably tell him again when he calls in, because while we give each other a heaping load of crap, we've known each other for a long time. And the reality is the relationship that we have with Pewter Report, and to be honest, a number of other periodicals and media outlets here in town, but primarily Pewter Report. I've said it before. I cut my teeth on Pewter Report. They were the people that I trusted before we started. So to have that relationship and that partnership does mean a lot to us, but specifically the relationship we have with Mark and what he does and how he covers. I think that Pewter Report does a great job. I think Scott, I think that the new a new addition of Trevor is going to be great. And that whole team does a great job, but it's been great to have Mark here. And also Chris won't be here tonight. He's off, traveling for work, but Chris is still swinging a hammer out there, guys. And, you know, I know he tapped down on Buck's Brief, podcast, but he's still out there fighting the good fight. So big shout out to all those guys. And another shout out to our crew. I see Spence over in the chat room, all the people on my team that make this thing possible, who give a crap about what we do. I see Shook out there as well. Spence just gave me more 500 backpacks full of things, of school supplies for children. We're done this year. Hundreds of pounds of food, over 600 toys, 54 bikes to kids in town. It's been an amazingly, you know, I'm not a religious guy, so I don't use the term blessed often, but I think you guys will know what I mean. It's been an incredibly blessed year for What the Buck. And that's because of the support of our crew and our sponsors and folks like you. And the nice words that I heard at the tailgate and heard on Twitter from people about how our experience has made their game day experience means the world, guys. Because every year, I've said it before, every year the first question that we have to sit back and ask ourselves is, do we do it again? And you never know what the answer is going to be. So far for 11 years, it's been yes. But you just don't know, because to be honest, it can be a lot of work and a pain in the ass. So at any rate, that's sort of the preamble. Like I said, I want to make sure that I told you guys a little bit about the tailgate stuff, because that's phenomenal. I do want to send a shout out as well to our authors. You guys have seen the content out there from our authors. It's been phenomenal having those guys on. I'm looking forward to them staying on, regardless of what our direction is, having those guys continue to put out good quality content that I think is actually full of material is phenomenal. So that's all tremendous. Thanks to you guys in the chat room as well. Shuck has asked a question in the chat room. He saw a thing that Dumig blasted Martin for years of drug use. He did. Steve Dumig, known as the big dog here in town, the afternoon drive time DJ on 620 WDAE, came out in a segment and said that it was well known in the South Tampa scene that Martin was a Molly guy. And I'm going to assume you guys all know what Molly is. I'm not plugged into that South Tampa scene anymore like I was back in the day. I did call around to some of the people that I know. They didn't know anything, but that doesn't mean that Steve is wrong. Steve is typically pretty well plugged into those sorts of things. He also was very clear in the way he articulated it that the Bucks knew he knew, and they didn't do anything about it. Like, they weren't telling him not to talk about it. So that's a pretty strong stance. Like, I may not like the way the guy does radio, and by may not, I mean you guys know I don't. But if you're going to come out with that strong a stance, you must have something to back it on. Now, that's not, you know, I never partied with Doug. I never hung out with Doug in a social setting. There have been guys I have that I've told you guys about. I know that when I met with Doug, when I was able to speak with Doug, he's always been great. But that doesn't mean that great people don't do drugs, whether it's Adderall or Molly or whatever it happens to be. So like I said from the beginning, I hope he's getting the support he needs. I hope he's getting the help he needs. But I would also like to make sure that we anchor this back in what I believe to be the reality, which is what you put on tape. Like Warren Sapp said, the eye in the sky don't lie. When Fish and I did the review, what Martin did on the field was not in any way hampered by anything, right? He was running to where he could. And I know people are going to use the numbers again without the film. And I said it last time, I couldn't be any more clear. And the troll who came in here, who's a troll from another show, didn't like it. But unless you're going to sit down with me or with Fish and watch film and show us where those yards were, I don't give a shit what you say, right? You can't just use the data, especially the small sample size you had, to prove your point. Furthermore, it doesn't matter, right? He's been suspended. We're taking the action we could. Now, one thing, and I do want to echo this, guys, and I see Spent in the chat room said Anthony Becht had no sympathy for Martin. That's great. That's everyone has a right to judge another person the way they want to, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. When you are in the public eye, everything you do is under a microscope. So if you're going to go out there and use drugs or whatever it happens to be, then people are going to judge you for it. Now, I'm not one who typically jumps off on someone on their first or second offense like this when it comes to drugs, especially if it's a performance-enhancing drug that could have been Adderall or whatever. I don't have any data that's been released that lets me know that it's Molly. Furthermore, I don't know that Molly's that big a deal. I do have a problem with a teammate that puts his team in jeopardy. That's an issue, regardless of what the thing is, whether it's a performance-enhancing drug, whether it's motor vehicle issues, whether it's DUIs, whatever it is. If you are a player on a team and you choose to take action that hurts the team because you're no longer available, then I have a problem with you, right? But I'm not a one strike and you're out guy. I just haven't ever been, right? I'm going to give you those three strikes, especially for a guy like Doug, who I think has worked his ass off and deserved them. But that's just me. A lot of people are going to take the low road, or what I consider to be the low road. Again, that's just my opinion, and use nicknames for them and take their shots and do that other stuff. I think it's lowbrow, cheap bullshit is what I think it is. But that's just me. That's how I would choose to do what I do. Everyone else is free to do what they would do. So Anthony Beck is a great guy. I enjoy him a lot on the radio and on television. So I'm not going to say he's a bad commentator or anything of that. But what I have seen a lot on Twitter is a lot of turncoat and cats. And I do find it to be, sort of below the folks that are doing it, to be honest. But that's just me. All right. Going into this game this week, and we'll talk about this a little bit, we had a great tailgate once again, our final tailgate. I got to tell you, the fans were pretty fantastic. Even though there was not much to play for, I thought that crowd was absolutely, as the Utes would say, lit. I was doing some Periscopes during the game, and it was so exciting to watch the fans' reaction during this game against Carolina. There have been times where I have attacked in tremendous, tremendous volume our fans here in Tampa, or the absence thereof. But I got to tell you, it feels different now. The fans were there. The fans were loud. The fans were engaged. And I was proud as shit to be a Buccaneers fan. Win or lose, right? They were into it. And so it was really, 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 really good. What was I going to say here? I was talking about, we collected at the tailgate, by the way, over 380 pounds, I believe. I know Cheryl had the first batch. I've got the second batch of peanut butter. We're trying to get to 1,000 pounds. All those proceeds are going to Alliance for Independence. From a cash perspective, the peanut butter is going to Feeding America. Bucks Baller in the chat room says that they think that Dirk handled the situation way better than the Bucks did with Josh Freeman. I agree. And I came out and said that. Listen, I was very critical of, pardon me, guys, still getting over a cold. The way Dirk Cutter had sort of done, sitting Jacquizz Rodgers a few weeks ago with no reason other than maybe special teams, and that's what he said, and then sitting Doug Martin, it was very cryptic what was going on. Now, the reality is Dirk has got a little bit of Belichick in him, and we've talked about this throughout the year. You kind of have to win a bunch before you get to pull the Belichick emperor card. But what came to light is that Dirk was dealing with a really complicated situation that privacy was critical in. And I said it afterwards, having the benefit of hindsight, I don't know that the team or the coach could have handled that situation any better than they did. Hats off to the entire organization, and specifically Coach Cutter. And I forgot which writer it was, and I apologize if you are he or she, came out and said what Coach Cutter showed was he will take all of the negativity. He will shield his players, right? The great leaders take all of the crap and they give away all of the credit. That's true outside of football. If you've ever seen a great leader, they will take all of the responsibility for the things that go wrong and they will distribute all of the credit to others for the things that go well. Now, I've liked Coach Cutter since he's been here. You guys know that. You guys know I was a I was a lovey guy. I don't think that that was handled well. I don't have to continually repeat that whole dialogue or diatribe, right? Hopefully you guys still get it. I never disliked Coach Cutter. Do I think Coach Cutter's perfect? No, I don't. The discussion about him not being the play caller, I think, is actually a good one, because I think our offense continues to regress in the back end of the season. Now, some of that could be with regards to injuries, but in general, I think that I think that anyone in that position has to have some fresh blood that they can play off of, and maybe take that role away from him a little bit during the game so he can manage the game. His game management is something he has to work on. That's what he's got to do. Now, some people are concerned because one of the things that got him the job was being a play caller. Well, yes and no. Being an architect got him the job. The play calling itself at times has been very good. And we've talked about it. There have been drives where Coach Cutter has just been on fire, right? It's almost like you're a basketball player and you're on a roll and everything you're throwing up is going in. But at the same time, we've got to figure out a way, whether it's Coach Cutter or some other play caller, to realize some of the weaknesses that this team has. And when you look at the drop-off of the offense this year, and I said it in the podcast for the last 3 weeks now, and I was going through my notes about what we're going to talk about today, it was another week of exactly what we're getting used to, which is moments of brilliance and many moments of despair. Is this the Ginger Badass?
The one and only.
Oh, the one and only Ginger Badass. Welcome to the podcast, everyone out there at the show. You guys know the voice, Mark Cook, 1970 on Twitter, of @pewterreport.com. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
I'm good, man. How are things going with the Fournier family?
Everyone's good. Everyone survived vacation, which is good given the gunfire that was around us in Hampton, Virginia. For anyone driving through Virginia, avoid Hampton, apparently. But no, we're all good.
Thanks, though.
Hey, listen, that person should not have talked to me that way, because otherwise I wouldn't let them shoot at me. So, at any rate, I'm glad that did you have a good Christmas and New Year's?
Oh yeah, great. Had a great time. You, as usual, spent too much money paying for it today, but you know how that goes.
Oh, absolutely. Fun today.
The things we'll do for our kids. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, listen, Mark, I'd already given a little bit of credit to Pewter Report. I want to make sure I do it while you're on. I don't know if you were listening beforehand, but probably not. I want to thank you for this season. You are a no small part of what kept things going this year, and my belief is that should they continue to keep going, you will be no small part moving forward. Your participation, your passion, your information, your knowledge of and relationship with Nuck Nuck, right? All of these things have led to this being a manageable thing to continue with my life. So I appreciate not only you as a friend, and that gets all mushy, but I appreciate what you've done for us at What the Buck and continue to do as a representative or liaison for Pewter Report, as well as an individual. So big thanks to you, Mark, for what you've done.
That. Thanks, man. I appreciate you letting me do it. It's a great avenue to promote Pewter Report and hang out with you and Chris and all of the listeners and have a good dialogue. And, of course, I've told you guys a million times how much we appreciate all the things that you guys do in the community. And I hope that I can be more involved in that moving forward this year. I'm definitely playing golf. I'll tell you that much. I'm excited about the golf tournament coming up in April. That's awesome.
Well, it'll be closer for you, too. It's out here in the Brandon area, River Hills.
Yes,
much
easier.
Closer. Excellent. Now, you obviously are our lifeline to the Buccaneers. You're a legitimate journalist. You're a credentialed journalist. There's been a lot of shenanigans and hijinks. That's not true. But there's a lot of end-of-the-year stuff wrapping up. There's a lot of Coach Cutter talking about potentially backing off of the play-calling duties. There's Mike Smith interviewing for every job available. What's going on at One Buck Place? Tell us your perspective about how things are and generally the tenor of what's going on up there. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think things, you know, I mean, there's always going to be end of the year things, you know, the whole Doug Martin situation there before the last week, you know, we'd almost made it through a whole year without anything crazy going on, right? The Josh Freeman situation, a Mike Williams, you know, laying on a mattress in somebody's yard in Carrollwood situation, a MRSA situation, you know, I was thinking, boy, we made it a whole year without anything crazy. And then the situation with Doug, which was, you know, disheartening, but we obviously our thoughts and prayers with him, hopefully get his life straightened out. You know, my personal belief, and I don't have anything concrete on that, is you know, I think there's a chance they, you know, probably move on from Doug. You know, I mean, he's not going to be available the first three games of the year. You know, but again, we'll see how that all plays out. I mean, there's contract situation and money still involved, although I believe they can void the guaranteed, but we'll see. I mean, now I say that doesn't mean that I want that to happen.
Right.
You know, I'm still a fan of Doug Martin as a running back. Unfortunately, there's not many of us left that are, but I'm still a fan of him on the field. But the best availability is availability, and unfortunately, he's not going to be available those first 3 weeks of the year. And essentially, not to be callous or hard, but he let his football team down, and that's disappointing. But it happens. It doesn't just happen in professional sports. It happens at your office. It happens, you know, all over the place. Addiction and getting involved in things you think you can control. You know, those things happen all the time in real life. And I think this kind of brings it back that sports is real life, and there's real problems that people have that are more important than the game of football. Sometimes we do lose sight of that, myself included. So, but hopefully Doug gets things straightened out. As far as other things going on, I thought Dirk being that revealing there after the last game about giving up play calling duties, potentially. And I don't know that he does. You know, I think that, you know, what he said was, he doesn't want to give it up and then take it back. And, you know, Lovie Smith did that. He came to the Buccaneers, hired Leslie Frazier, and then after a year decided he wanted to do it. You know, guys want to go down with the ship, right? And I'm not saying this ship is going down by any stretch, but I'm just saying there's no excuses at that point. If the head man is the one calling the plays and they don't work, then there's one person to point at. So,
and when that person is the one they point at, they only fire him, right? Everyone else keeps their job. Oh, wait, no, everyone still gets fired. It's dumb.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the essence of delegation. Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's usually the thing that gets brought up. And it was the thing with Lovie as well. But the concept of a head coach not being willing to have a coordinator that calls the plays is like having a CEO who doesn't have someone in the mailroom. Right?
Right.
Delegation has to happen. And no, I know the mailroom's different than calling all the plays for offense. Yeah, I get it. I exaggerated to prove a point, people. But the reality is, in an organization of that size, there were game time decisions, clock management decisions, strategic decisions. Hell, we had a running joke in the stands. He thought he got extra cheeseburgers for saving timeouts the same way Lovie
did. Right.
Right? If you don't have the ability, and it's not a slight to him, it's a lot to keep in your head. If you can't manage all of that shit real time, and call the plays, you got to give one of them up. So either get a consultant who is game manager, who handles that stuff and is on the headset going, coach, call a timeout, or throw the challenge flag, or whatever it happens to be, or you give up the play calling things, right? And you can still
now,
participate.
He actually does have that guy that's in his ear. I mean, go back to that Rams game, and you know, his guy was saying, call a timeout. But, you know, but again, I think that it surprised Dirk, you know, how much is involved. And that's something that we talked about even before the season started. I mean, you know, look, I joked, and I think I've said it on your show before. I used to be the offensive coordinator for the Plant City Raiders high school JV football team.
Record-setting,
okay?
Plant City JV high school.
And we scored 12 points that year in 5 games. But we were all friends that year. Coach Long took anybody that had any talent at all. I'm going to blame him for and moved them up to varsity. But bottom line is it is amazing when you're on the gun and you got 30 seconds, right, to make a play call and to make sure you got the right personnel in. Okay, which hash mark are we on? I mean, there is a lot going on, and this didn't mean a thing in the world that it was stressful. So now you're at the highest level of football competition in the world. And so I think it kind of surprised Dirk how much is going on.
Well, that's how
time.
It is with people who've never coached that level in any capacity. Oh, wait, no, he's done that.
But you know what? And there are guys who can manage it. I mean, there are, you know, guys. I mean, John Gruden was that guy. And there's a few other offensive-minded coaches out there that don't give up play calling duties. Andy Reid's another one of them and a few more. So, but again, you know, it's something that Dirk, I applaud him for being willing to at least step back and evaluate himself.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
You know, leave his ego at the door and decide, hey, what's best for this football team? Now, he may decide in his mind it's best for this football team to him to continue to call plays, but at least he's taking a look at it. And there's a lot of coaches out there in this world that would not do that. So that's something I applaud. But, you know, so we had the Doug situation. We had that, you know, Mike Smith. Look, I think there's a good chance he's gone. And I think the Buccaneers believe that as well. And they've already started some contingency plans on that. You know, but Dirk, I like Dirk. One of the things I like about Dirk is I like his cockiness, right? Even when he's wrong, he's cocky. You know, I kind of like that. And Dirk, you know, Dirk said when he was asked there on Monday by us media about, you know, do you have somebody in mind? Do you have plans? He says, yeah, listen, he said, I feel I hired a pretty good staff, last January. And he says, I don't have any reason to believe that I won't find a good coordinator if Mike Smith leaves. And but I also believe, and I don't know about you, Dirk. I just called you Dirk, but Derek.
Well, I'm confused by it. I'm confused for Dirk often.
I would prefer it come from within house if he feels there's a guy qualified. Just because it doesn't matter if you bring in a Gus Bradley who runs a similar scheme to Mike Smith. It's still not the same terminology. He's still going to do things. He's still going to have his way. You know, and we talked about continuity last year, one of the reasons Dirk Cutter was hired. You know, so that part of things, you know, I think is important. If they feel they've got a guy that can succeed Mike Smith and you know, not change things up too much. You know, I feel for a guy like Lavonte David. Think about the amount of coordinators that he's been through and things like that. But certainly they're not going to bring in a Rex Ryan who's all of a sudden going to run a crazy 3-4 defense or something like that. You know, they've got personnel on this team now that they want to build around. I don't think we're going to see any dramatic shifts from what Mike Smith did. But at the same time, continuity, I think, is important. I think his defense was getting things. We certainly saw an improvement over the last half of the year, and I'd hate to see that broken up. But, I mean, Dirk's the one that knows better than we know if Mark Duffner is a guy that can do it, or Jay Hayes or John Hoke or one of those guys. And we actually have a story up that Trevor did, our new writer, did a story on, you know, some potential candidates for that job if people want to check it out.
It was very good
today on Peter Report.
Yeah, very good. Trevor's been putting out some good content. You've been putting out some good content. We've been retweeting that stuff. But I did see his walk of like the he went from the sort of big names, the Rex Ryans of the world. And if you guys haven't read the article, he broke down what their scheme preference was, whether there was a scheme continuity with what we already do, that sort of thing. And then sort of had a little blurb about each one of the coordinators. And I thought he did a very thorough job of it. And mm-hmm. You know, like Mark said, you know, continuity is great. Now, the double-edged sword of promoting from within is, generally speaking, 95% of Bucks fans couldn't name the guys underneath Mike Smith on that defensive staff. So if no-name Joe comes in and is the defensive coordinator behind Mike Smith, who's kind of walking on sunshine right now, whereas the offense has sort of fallen off a little bit towards the end of the year like it did last year, the defense has sort of found its legs a little bit at the end of the year. So he's going out on a good note if he goes out at all, right? The next guy better damn well continue that trend. Or it's going to be, well, why did we hire this no-name guy? We should have gotten an insert name here that everyone remembers.
Sure.
Of course, Jeff Fisher's available for anyone keeping track.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't need any more mustachioed coaches around here.
Hey, listen, man, Fisher, boy, he's ready to get hired. But no, it's a good point. And, you know, when you look at what the team has, we're going into the offseason that I happen to hate. I detest the offseason because it's just a big pile of conjecture. But you guys put out your first mock draft. I thought it was well-written. There'll be a bajillion of these between now and the combine and post-combine.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll have 13 million of those bajillion ourselves, just to let you know.
Oh, of course. Well, you've got to. Yeah. Bucks Baller in the chat room wants to know who would be the OC. Who would be the play caller, right? If someone else were to call the plays for Dirk, and my guess would be is Monken or one of the other guys that's already on staff, he would just transition to them because they have worked with him. It's like anything else. When you work with someone hand-in-hand in the film room, they know your style. I don't think there's going to be a huge schematic change because, like I mentioned, Dirk is the architect of this.
Right, right, right. No, there's not going to be any dramatic shift. And you know, I think Mike Bajakian is a strong candidate. He's a guy that I really like. I think he's a guy the Buccaneers could potentially lose at some point. I thought he's done a very good job with Jameis Winston. And when you talk to the offensive, quarterbacks in this football team, not that there's defensive quarterbacks, that was kind of dumb to say, but
middle linebackers, you could have gotten away with it. That's fine.
but you know, they love Mike Bajakian. Jameis Winston's really close to him. And you know what? That's something that Dirk pointed out. That's something that he misses about being the offensive coordinator and the head coach of this team is the individual time, those meetings with Jameis Winston and talking to players individually, because his day, and we're not just talking game day, we're talking about, you know, the Monday through Saturday where, you know, every minute is filled. He's got interviews, he's got meetings, he's got, you know, a film review, he's got 1,000 things he's doing and meeting with the owners, meeting with Jason Light, those kind of things that he probably didn't do as much of when he was just the offensive coordinator. So he misses those things. He wants to be more involved in that. And he realizes that he can't if he is, the play caller as well. So that may be something. But I think Monken or Bajakian are the two guys that make the most sense there. And I would say it's, 50-50. I don't think one's ahead of the other. Maybe Monken, just because he's kind of been given that title when he came aboard as offensive coordinator slash wide receivers coach. But I think Mike Bajakian has a good shot. And I think this is a guy that will be a hot commodity, you know, down the road for an offensive coordinator job. If, you know, I don't think he's head coaching, you know, candidate by any stretch right now, but he could be. But the next step for him to be would be from going quarterbacks coach to offensive coordinator, and he's had a lot of experience in that in the college ranks.
Well, the reality is Mike Shula and Clyde Christensen still have jobs at offensive coordinator, so there are better people behind them that could take those roles. And I apologize to the four fans of Clyde Christensen and Mike Shula, but they're not very good at it, right? So, you know, what we've got here seems like an improvement. I agree with what you're saying. I think that both know Coach Cutter well. Now, you did say something I want to kind of zero in on a little bit, though. The concept of losing that high touch if you go from a coordinator to the head coach is something that, you know, it's funny. When Mike Smith came here, everyone thought, oh, we'll only have him for a year. He's going to be a hot commodity. We were able to hire him, right? So he was available. Now, Mike Smith has tasted what being a head coach under the scrutiny of being a head coach is, right? In Atlanta, this is a guy who did very well and still was unceremoniously flushed the way head coaches always end up getting. It doesn't matter how successful. Look at what's going on with Sean Payton. There are people calling for his head in New Orleans, and the guy has done everything short of turn water into wine. So,
right.
So if you're a Mike Smith, what is it in – I think I know my answer, but I want to hear your answer. What is it that makes you go, listen, I've got one of the top young quarterbacks in the league. I've got one of the top young receivers in the league here on my offensive side, so I don't have to worry about that. On defense, I got one of the best defensive tackles, two of the best linebackers in the league. I've got the ability, and I'm rebuilding my secondary, right? This is a team that, for all intents and purposes, and not from a biased pewter-colored glasses, should be on the way up. I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl contender, but they got all the Legos here, right? What makes you want to go get your ass kicked again, potentially, on some crap team that just fired their coach? You know what I mean? What makes you want to do that?
Right. Well, I think it's an ego thing as much as anything. Look, we all, you know, I love Peter Report, right? But a Sports Illustrated call tomorrow, yes, it would be a higher pressure job. Yes, they would expect better content. I would have to be a better writer. I couldn't, you know, do the What the Bug podcast every week.
Oh, yes, you could. But we've got a rider with Sports Illustrated. It's fine.
but it's the pinnacle, right? I mean, you know, and I think that's just always in the mind of coaches. And, you know, I think that's what it would be. And because, again, turning around the franchise, you know, turning, you know, the way Tony Dungy did, this guy will be immortalized by Buccaneer fans forever.
Sure.
Who knows what happens if Steve Spurrier or Jimmy Johnson would have been hired, because they were both interviewed. Tony was third choice, right?
Yep.
So, you know, who knows what would have happened with this franchise? And look, you know, Greg Schiano had his shot, and Raheem Morris had his shot. And so the odds are it doesn't pan out when you look at the amount of coaches that are fired every year and the turnover and the things like that. There's not many Bill Belichick's around or Tony Dungy's around and things like that. I mean, but here's the deal. John Gruden and Tony Dungy were both fired. I mean, so,
fired.
I mean, you know, you're eventually going to get – I joke around when I teach that class, those classes at
CSB.
Connecticut School of Broadcasting. I say, listen, you haven't been in radio till you've been fired three times. So you walk in one day and they flip formats and you have no idea. I mean, and you're not an NFL head coach unless, you know, you've been fired. Bill Belichick was once fired. I mean, twice maybe. I don't even remember. But, you know, Pete Carroll – fired by the Patriots, had to go back to college football, then came back to Seattle and has a Super Bowl ring. So, but there's just, I think it's the desire to, you know, to prove that you're the best at the highest level of competition. Now, again, Mike Smith is not 45. He's 57, I believe. And, you know, he may look at this, sit back with his family and say, you know what? I got a great place. I can go to the beach, you know, when I want to. Florida, I don't have any state income tax. You know, I can just be that coordinator. I don't have to be that dirt cutter who's now deciding, whoa, you know, this is quite a bit, you know. So but he's done it and he's been successful, and I think, you know, that's probably the reason why, you know, Mike won't say. I talked to Mike on Monday when the players were packing up, and he didn't really want to get into it, and he's always been an aw shucks kind of guy.
Sure.
And when we were talking to him, he was talking about, you know, what he's gonna do this off season, and you know, he's going to stick around here in Tampa. Some coaches, you know, might go back and forth to where they're from. Mike's living here now. He loves it here. So, you know, it doesn't mean – and listen, just because there's six openings, right, and just because he interviews for three of them or four of them, maybe all six of them, still doesn't mean he gets the job, because
sure,
there's other candidates out there as well. And there's talk that, you know, that perhaps the Jaguars, which makes the most sense because he has a history there, you know, want to, you know, bring somebody in that could really see what they could do with Bortles this year and some of those offensive weapons. So, you know, it just depends on the owners of the other teams, too.
You know,
it's not just Mike Smith making that decision, obviously.
Chip Kelly is available.
Yes.
So, I mean, he, as I understand, he's very, very good with the offensive side of the ball. Going to revolutionize the NFL.
Look what he did with Colin Kaepernick. I mean, that's a perfect prototype quarterback for his system.
It's a hot take.
And it worked marvelously this year.
You almost got marvelously out the first time, which is not an easy one to do. Ren in the chat room, the grades, you can do game grades. I mean, I wasn't going to spend too much time talking about the game against Carolina, though we can. I don't know that anything was I don't know that I learned a whole lot in that game other than I think that our team fought, which is good. And that's what I think fans have always wanted. They want the team.
You wondered.
Yeah, exactly. What would they do? And they had to fight through the Aguayo
teams,
you know?
Yeah. We've seen plenty of these Buccaneer teams mail it in the last few weeks of the year, and this team certainly didn't do that. Now, they talked about, well, you know, we're going to go out there and fight, and we want to beat Carolina because, we want to make the playoffs if by chance they could. Interesting fact that Greg Allman or Rick Stroud, one of them came up with, is had the last two games been reversed and the record the same, the Buccaneers would have made the playoffs. Had they beaten New Orleans and lost to Carolina, they would have been in the playoffs. And, you know, so it was that close. It was very, very close to the team making the playoffs, but they didn't mail it in. They fought. And like I said, we've seen plenty of Buccaneer teams in years past, you know, by week 12 or 13 have given up. And this team went out and fought it. And they caught some breaks in that game. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if Olsen doesn't slip on that 2-point conversion, you know, we're depressed because it's an 8-8 season. But real quick on the Dirk, I always try and throw you a little inside story here. You know, Dirk the last week was kind of saying, well, you know, 8-8, 9-7, you know, not that big of a deal because teams change and, you know, momentum, what does that matter? And as I was walking with him to his press conference after that game, he jumped in and took a selfie with me, by the way. I put that on Twitter if people haven't seen it. I was taking a picture with Gene Deckerhoff, and I heard somebody yelling, wait for me, wait for me, and it was Dirk Cutter. He was very giddy after that game because that's not Dirk Cutter's normal personality. But we laughed and had a good time, and we were kind of walking into the press conference room, and I said, Coach, I said, I know what you said. I said, but, you know, 9-7, 8-8 is a huge difference. You know, may not be from the football operations standpoint, but just from a general standpoint, from the fans and the community and things like that, it's huge for this football team. And he says, you know what? You're absolutely right. He says, I don't always tell you guys everything I'm thinking, but yeah, he says, trust me, I know how important getting that last win was.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think everyone in the world saw your selfie. So it's all good. But
did
no,
Kate Upton see it? Because that's all that matters.
Well, not Kate Upton, our author whose nickname is not Kate Upton, whose name is Pat, with that lets you know how not Kate Upton he is. He did see
far
it.
From the, you can't get two opposite ends of the spectrum of Pat and Kate Upton, true.
No, it's funny, and you gave a lot of material just there, a lot of information, not just a cool anecdote, because you and I are the same way. When we see Gene Deckerhoff, we have to take a picture with him. And listen, there are a lot of people on Twitter like, Deckerhoff's play-by-play is bad. You don't know if it's a 10-yard loss or a touchdown. You get so excited and all these sorts of things.
Right.
They're all true, guys. I get it. But I grew up with that man. I listened to him on the radio at Saddle Creek in Lakeland because it wasn't on TV. And I'll die thinking that's the voice of the Buccaneers. Right? That's
absolutely.
He's our Harry Carey, right?
Yep.
And so I totally get the giddiness. I remember being at training camp one year and cleaning off the tables because it had rained the night before they put those tents out there. And Gene came over and was helping me clean off the table. And I didn't see who was doing it at first. And I looked over and I go, oh, hey, Mr. Deckerhoff. He goes, hey there, big fella. How you doing? And I was like, oh, my God, Gene Deckerhoff. He's talking to me. But it's cool that Cutter felt that way. And like, you know, Ren in the chat room said they competed, right? And like you said, they didn't go out there and lay down. And it wasn't just that they didn't lay down. It wasn't that they tried hard. They clearly wanted to win that game. You saw the effort on every single play. There was no one out there who was just giving it up. Everyone was out there busting their ass from the interceptions that weren't called interceptions and the receptions that were not called receptions. It was a team effort, which was great to see from a fan's perspective. And I had mentioned before you got on the call, Mark, I don't know how much, like in the press box, you sit right above me more or less. I don't know how good a feel you guys get, because I think the glass in the press box is fixed. You guys don't open that, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
No, not where I'm at. They've got some open booths for, you know, for some different important writers, but not for me. But yeah, and you can't, it's really hard to get a vibe of the crowd, you know what I mean? And you know, certainly I remember after that Rams game, after they came back from the rain delay and there was 15,000 people there, you could tell how loud it was for that, which is crazy. But it seemed like the crowd was really into it. And you know, and that's good to see because these fans deserve it. Because I've shared this story plenty of times, but I remember in 2011, my first year, and Raheem Morris's team on that 10-game slide. And I remember a game against the Texans when I think they gave up a touchdown on the first play of the game. Sean Jones got beat. What's new? I think that was his name, the safety at the time. But, you know, I really, for the first time in my life, felt sorry because I used to go to games, right? When I was younger, when I could drive, my parents would let me, I would go and buy a $15 ticket for $5 and then I would sell it for 10 and make five. And I would keep doing that until I got it for free. But bottom line is I sat through some miserable, miserable football games, but I just wanted to be there. I wanted to be in the stands. And there were plenty of games I knew the Bucs had no shot of winning, but I just wanted to be there. But I felt sorry in that 2011 season, last couple home games, because the team and I don't want to say essentially quit, but you just didn't have a feeling there was any chance they were going to win those football game or that football game against the Texans that year. And maybe another game after that, I can't remember, but I don't know. I just remember that game in particular thinking, man, you know, cause these people, you know, you guys pay a ton of money, you know, I complain cause I got to get up and at a 1 o'clock game, I got to get up, you know, at 9 o'clock and be at the stadium by 11. Boo hoo me. And, but I'm not shelling out, you know, $100, $200 a seat like some of you guys are. So, I felt sorry for you, but it was good for the fans. They deserve that. And Dirk Koetter understands that and appreciated that.
Well, and the reason we kind of went into that little segue was because like you could tell during the Rams game with the 15,000, and that was actually a very unique experience for the folks who stuck that out and stayed, right? This game and the last couple at home have felt like games used to feel when we mattered. Right. And you know, it's funny because a lot of fans are out there. Why don't we get any respect? Why aren't we in national prominence? Why aren't people giving us our credit? We don't deserve it yet. Right.
Right.
That will come. Right. That comes in time. And it started to come at the end of the year. Right. People started talking about us. And that's great. If that's the microscope you want us under, that's fine. But for a fan in the stands to feel that energy when I would Periscope sometimes live and not just the game, because it's not like a Periscope of the game is any better than the view on TV. The view on TV is amazing. It's a shitty little view on a cell phone, for God's sakes. But the difference was you could pan left and right and see the crowd's reaction, you know?
Yeah.
And it was absolutely, and I know that I'm sounding a little bit more positive and optimistic than I normally sound because I'm sort of a cynical ass a lot of the time. But as a fan, man, that's what you want. You go to the game to be excited. No, we're not always going to win, and that's okay. Our team's out there busting their ass, and there's improvements, and we get grumpy when things go poorly. But damn it, we're there, and we're able to watch it. And I did a little Periscope, and it was up well before you woke up that day, Mark. But I was driving into the game, like all of us, what the Buckers were, at 5 o'clock in the morning, getting up, time to make the donuts and all this sort of stuff. And I realized that my Sundays from 5 o'clock in the morning till probably, you know, if it's a late game, hell, 2 o'clock in the morning on the other side, are occupied with some of the most amazing people that I have ever come to know, and many of them I won't have met until I get to the tailgate, and they'll be there from another country, and for some crazy-ass reason, they love the Buccaneers just like I do. And they help us collect peanut butter, and they cheer for the team, and we have drinks with them, and we listen to music, and then we go to the game, and we cheer, and we moan, and we groan, and we pee in the toilets, and we do all the things together, and then we leave. We may not see each other for 4 more years. But it is truly an amazing thing of sport that I think the NFL has lost touch with when they keep talking about competing with the home game. And for those of you out there listening to the podcast, if you haven't been to a game, please get your ass over. The team is playing hard. I'm looking forward to it. Now, with that as a transition, Mark, let's talk about Carolina. What were the highs and lows of the Carolina game? And what do you think we can take coming from the Carolina game into the offseason that we can build on? What are you concerned about leaving the Carolina game that we have to truly build and sort of patch up?
Well, I'm trying to still figure out this offense. I mean, as I was talking earlier about the continuity of keeping Dirk Koetter because of the way that the team played, you know, last season under Dirk Koetter offensively, you know, they fell off the map a little bit this year. But, you know, and again, was it injuries? Was it play calling? Was it, you know, Jameis Winston? I don't know the answer to that yet. And I don't think we'll know the answer until next year where they can get some more weapons and try and figure things out. But offensively, this team stubbed its toe often. But again, when you look out there, and I'm not knocking Freddie Martino, and I'm not knocking Jacquizz Rodgers, and you know, Alan Cross, my son. I'm not knocking those guys, but the Buccaneers did not go into the season planning on those guys being the guys on the field in week 16 or 17, whatever you call it, 16 games, 17 weeks. It's confusing to me, but you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know. As much as I love Adam Humphries, you know, and he was the leading receiver in that game, you know, you wonder if, you know, where can they upgrade and where can they get better at? And, you know, that was something that I left that game still a little concerned about. But this offense really never got its feet underneath them a whole lot. I mean, you know, there just wasn't, you know, there wasn't a Philadelphia 45-17 game or whatever it was last year. So, you know, that's a little concerning. You know, I'm not concerned about James Winston by any stretch, but there's certainly some things that you hope he gets better at. And accuracy is one of them, although his accuracy did jump up over 60% this year. You know, that game was not his best game. It was not that sharp. And he had several games where he wasn't that sharp, but he did enough to win. And you know what? You know, Jameis will tell you he doesn't care about the statistics as long as they win. But I care about the statistics because, yes, you beat the Carolina Panthers who ended up 6-10, but, you don't beat the New England Patriots playing that way. In other words, so again, I'm not trying to be Mr. Negative here, but those are some things that are concerning, but I don't know what the answer is. Is it the fact that, you know, they didn't have Cameron Brate and Vincent Jackson out there and, you know, and some other guys that they were counting on that they certainly didn't when the season started. I don't know what the answer is there. Positives, obviously the play of the defense. You know, I didn't think the defense played well against New Orleans. I mean, they kept Breeze at 299 yards in that game on Christmas Eve, but they still just, you know, weren't their very good third down self that they were all year. So that was a little concerning in that game, but I thought they came back and played well and, you know, got, I don't know, what, 3 picks on Cam Newton, probably could have been 5 in that game. I mean, yep. I thought Conte's was, you know, an easy call, but it wasn't, whatever. But there was a couple other, Vernon Hargraves, I believe, had an opportunity for another one. I can't remember. There was at least 2 more balls, I think, that should have been picked in that game. Oh, Grimes, man, I can't remember. But anyway, bottom line is defensively, that was, you know, the big positive coming out of that game for me, the way the team finished up the year. If they would have finished up the year losing 34-13, I think, ooh, it's a different narrative right now. It's not really that different, if that makes sense, but the feeling and the mood is considerably different, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, if it's 34-13, I agree. If the team goes out there and competes with the injuries that were there, and you end up on let's say Olsen doesn't trip. Olsen doesn't slip on that route, right? Which, by the way, I don't think is a great play call. When you've got Cam Newton and you've got Kelvin Benjamin and you've got that jump ball crap that Florida used to run all the time in your playbook, right? How that's not your go-to play with him going to the post and Cam looking and just tossing it up or putting his arm over the pile. I don't know how you do that. But regardless, even if that ends up being the game winner, right, and we lose, I think there's still excitement, right? And you know, Gil Arcia on Twitter talked about how we lacked pressure and he used some statistics to talk about that. Anecdotally, I think that the times that we lacked pressure were predictable. There were times when we didn't have any defensive linemen whose names were actually stitched on a jersey. And when you look at the game against the Saints, the reason we lost to the Saints wasn't, in my opinion, Drew Brees. It was Ingram. It was the fact that the Saints could run the ball. And I love Noah Spence, but he is not an every down defensive end yet. Will Golston is right now. And I hope they go out there and sign Will, pay that man his money, Teddy KGB style, and get his ass back into this team. But, you know, defensively, I agree. There was that growth. I want to go back to your comments about Jameis Winston because that's been really kind of, you know, the Jameis thing is he's a polarizing factor, man. I watched him throw the ball 10 yards over Mike's head on the first throw, and I was like, wow, that's astonishingly bad that throw was done by a professional quarterback. Then not probably 7 or 8 offensive plays later, I watch him scramble around and look like Houdini, keep a play alive, and hit Humphries, who goes down to, you know, the west side of the field for a large gain. There's 3 quarterbacks probably in the NFL who can make that play.
Yep.
Right, and 2 of them are him. It's Jameis and Mr. Winston. So you have this dichotomy. I'll use the big words tonight. We'll use dichotomy between those 2 things. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think that you know Jameis better than probably anyone that's listening to this podcast right now. Does Jameis seem like the kind of guy to you that's going to be like, that was good enough. I'm going to go, like he said, I'm going to go enjoy my birthday and eat crab legs, and that's it, and I'll see you come next season? Is that how his offseason is going to be in your mind?
No, absolutely not. You know, now, but at the same time, you know, what is, does he have the ability to be better? I mean, you know, and God, that sounds crazy. I hope people understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, I can go work on trying to dunk a basketball, right? I'm just not going to be able to do it. You know, I might get a little closer. I might be able to touch the bottom of the net, right? Maybe I'll even touch the rim one of these days. Probably not. But the bottom line is, you know, I could work on it. It's just not going to happen. Now,
right.
You know, Jameis is, you know, from a standpoint, I think that is where his flaws lie. But those are also some of those flaws that turn into positives sometimes too. So bottom line is he's absolutely great enough to win multiple Super Bowls. I have no question about that at all. But is he ever going to be a pinpoint accurate, you know, dice him up Tom Brady? No, I just don't think that's, you know, in his skill set. But he brings other things to the table that makes up for that. So that's my talk on that. And I'm a huge Winston fan, but he will work. I mean, he will try. There's no question about it. There's no, well, you know, we were 9-7. That's good enough. Maybe we'll win 10 next year. I'm going to take the off season and chill. The guy is obsessed with the game of football. And you know what I was thinking as that season was over, as he was standing at the podium, and I didn't ask him the question. I didn't even ask him on Monday when I talked to him. But, you know, to me, it seems like yesterday the guy was drafted. He just finished his second season in the league. I mean,
yep.
You know, the older we get, we realize the more time flies. But, you know, and hopefully he's got another 10 or 12 years left in this league, and they're all in red pewter. And there's more of those Lombardis in the lobby there at One Buccaneer Place. But, you know, it's amazing how fast to me that it's gone. I hope that he can continue to get better and become more accurate. And he can. He can be more accurate. I'm not saying that, you know, he is what he is right this second. But again, he's not going to be a, you know, I just don't think, I don't see him being a dart thrower, in other words, where, you know, he's going to zip it. I mean, he still drops his hand a little bit. You know, he's got a little bit of the wind up. He still gets a little juiced up. His feet are still all over the place at times. But you don't want to take away his natural competitiveness and his natural, you know, playing. You don't want him thinking too much out there, because then when you start thinking and you become a robot, you know, that doesn't work. There's been some great Buccaneer quarterbacks from a mechanics standpoint, right, who weren't worth a damn on the football field, if that makes sense.
I'll tell you, you know, I agree with what you said. The thing, and I think your parallel is important, right? If we were trying to get him to learn how to be taller, right?
Mm-hmm.
that's tough, right? That's a tough,
right.
A tough task. But when it comes to accuracy, some of that stuff is, and you identified a couple of them. The windup that he's got is a little bit non-conventional, or unconventional is the proper word if you speak English mm-hmm. as a natural speaker, I guess. His footwork. These are things that other quarterbacks have been able to overcome. And you look at a guy like Stafford, he'll release the ball from directly overhead all the way to sidearm. But that's the way he's always been. You look at Aaron Rodgers, his feet are constantly going different directions, and somehow he's able to get the ball down the field. I think these things are imminently correctable with effort. And really, it comes down to effort. I remember I had a basketball coach when I was young who was teaching us free throws when I was very young. And he made us do these drills with one hand. And he said, the reason I developed this drill is because I broke my right arm. I was a right-handed shooter. And I never wanted to stop playing basketball. So I had to learn how to be a left hand. He was an ambidextrous shooter of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so he taught himself how to shoot with the left hand. Those are fine motor skills that you can definitely develop and work on. And I think those are things that he can do. And the third one that you brought up specifically was he gets amped up, right? That is absolutely controllable, right? That is a mental thing. And he can do, if there's one of those three things that I think is the most in his grasp, right, it's that one, because he's got to take that energy and vent it somewhere else. But we've only got a few minutes left, because I'm going to stop at 10 o'clock tonight. I'm going to say hi to my wife. I'm going to say hi to my kids, and we're going to talk about it. But I want to talk a little bit about Pewter Report here. We're not going to have time to do grades. I apologize, guys. We'll do grades throughout the week. Our articles will continue. Pewter Report's articles will continue at a more frenetic pace than us, because that's what they do full time. You guys have your mock draft. Is there anything you want to review on there? I know you got Scott's Fab Five, I suspect, coming out tomorrow. What other exciting things can folks expect from Pewter Report going into this offseason that for the Bucks is now not about mystery and wonder, but more about, you know, building and taking a next step, right? 9-7, right? Okay, we knocked on the door, guys. Like Greg pointed out, had we flipped the last two games, we'd be in the playoffs, be having a different conversation. What do we do next, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we're really bringing Trevor aboard, I think, is going to help. He's really into the draft part of things, and I think we're going to have a lot more of that this spring, moving forward as far as, you know, and again, listen, we're not scouts, right? Okay, if we were, we would be working under Jason Light, but at the same time, you can spend a lot of time evaluating, going to Mobile, talking to general managers, talking to scouts, building your sources, watching every college game you got. I know Scott's DVR is completely filled with college games from this year that he goes back and watches.
Anything other than K-State or just K-State?
No, he's got other ones besides. Most of them are K-State, but there's some other ones too. But, and Trevor's the same way. Draft isn't my big thing. I love the draft itself when it happens, but, the whole, trying to evaluate a kid out of Western Michigan is not my strong suit, but it is theirs more so than mine. So, we're gonna spend a lot of time, looking at that, but certainly with free agency coming up, I don't expect the Buccaneers to be huge players, but you can fill some needs, and we saw them do that last year. I mean, look, Brian Anger, was that one of the best free agent acquisitions in the entire NFL?
Certainly this year, it absolutely was. Now he's going to come back and do it next year, right?
And this was an afterthought. I was actually at the NFL owners meeting when the Bucs signed him, and I was like, okay, great. What's the big deal? I'll throw a little story up, no big deal. This guy was a weapon for this team, a guy like Josh Robinson on special teams. We saw what the Jaguars did last year in free agency, spending $250 million, and Gus Bradley's unemployed right now. So, again, when we saw Jason Light do that his first year with the Anthony Collins and the escapes me, the defensive end from Cincinnati, and Josh McCown and those guys, and it didn't pan out. So, winning free agency usually does not equate to winning Super Bowls. So, but as they draft better, they don't have that as many of those immediate needs where you've got to go out and spend, $6 million or $7 million a year on a guy like Anthony Collins, And so, we're going to be looking at free agency a lot, a lot of draft stuff. And, of course, I think Trevor brings a lot to the table. We appreciate, what he's already brought to the table. And you know what? Listen, fresh blood is a good thing. You know what? It's made Scott and I work harder. I think our articles are better. And you can get stale at times. So bringing him aboard has really helped us out. And, we will be in Mobile. I'll actually be in Orlando for the Pro Bowl, covering that, the Buccaneer players that are there, doing some video stuff with them and things like that. Great. The 1 year I get to go to the Pro Bowl, they move it to Orlando from Hawaii. Boo-hoo. But anyway, I would much rather be in, Honolulu, but I'll take Orlando if I have to. Bottom line is, we're going to pump out the content. We want people to come to our website, not every day. We want to be able to come multiple times a day and see that there's five or six new things up as opposed to just one or two. So something we're working on. Going to try and work on some new video concepts, and try and expand there. We don't want to be a dinosaur. I mean, technology is changing constantly, and we're going to work on trying to be on the forefront of that this off season and see what we can do to bring better content to people like our listeners right now.
Well, let me know if there's any way that we can help. I don't often pound myself on the back, but I will say that if we've done a couple things well, the community stuff that you've already called out. The other thing is we have driven the tech envelope.
Absolutely.
And we continue to do that, and we will continue to do that as long as we continue to broadcast. So, if there's any way that we can help you guys, let us know. You do know that the most well-watched Pewter Pulse in the history of the world was not the one with you and I. That one was the 31st most watched one, but it was still in the top 50. So there's always that going for you. But the only questions that are lingering here are around Aguayo, the discussion about bringing in competition. Do you feel that is a smokescreen, or are they really, let's say they bring in another, they've already brought in another leg, but let's say they bring in a leg that someone recognizes, and we go into training camp, and Aguayo stinks up the joint again. Are they really ready to say, okay, we screwed up on that draft?
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I've already looked at the free agent kicking list, and it's Robbie Gould and Connor Barth and Hauschka from the Seahawks, who they're not going to let get away. So that's it. And then you got a bunch of guys that nobody knows. So
you mean like Brian Anger?
But, Yes, like Brian Anger, exactly,
yeah, okay.
or like Pat Murray, our good
right.
Irish friend. But you know, they you've got to have more consistency out of your kicker. Now, with that said, though, you know, I don't want to beat Roberto up too much. I know he missed that 46 yarder the other day and had one blocked, and I don't know that we can blame him on the block. I haven't went back and looked at it to see if he kicked it low or what happened there. But bottom line is you know, he got his feet underneath him a little bit better as the season, you know, progressed. I talked to him on Monday, you know, just kind of off the record, and you know, he's looking forward to this off season, looking forward to you know, seeing what he can do to get better, and he thinks he'll be fine next year, and I think the Buccaneers are certainly hoping that's the case. Their fingers are crossed. They want Roberto Aguayo to succeed. There's nobody in the organization that doesn't. But it's a what have you done for me lately business, and you know,
it's a,
as a kicker,
you
literally have one job. That's your job. You are to kick it between those goalposts that are 14 foot, 3 inches wide or whatever it is. I don't know where they are, but you know what I'm saying.
Sounds so very official.
He's got to be better. You can't – listen, I don't know the last time, and this may go back to the old early, you know, late 70s with Neil O'Donohue, but when's the last time the Buccaneer had a kicker who did not kick a field goal or no, did not make a field goal over – 43 yards. That is a terrible statistic. Take away the 71% or whatever he finished with. You know, you've got to be more consistent beyond 45 yards, and that's something that he wasn't this year at all.
Listen, Donald Igwebuike, he is not at this point.
he is. You're absolutely right. He is no Igwebuike, including he's not a heroin dealer. I think
nor Obed Oriri. So, at any rate, big shout out to Mark Cook from PewterReport.com. You want to follow him on Twitter in the off season at MarkCook1970. You can also follow at PewterReport. I think sometimes he is the writer there, but I think they share that. You guys share that responsibility across the board, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And Trevor did a really good job Sunday. We threw him in the fire, and Trevor's you know, listen, he's a younger kid. He understands this newfangled stuff a lot more than me and Scott do. So, but he's going to contribute. He's already contributed a lot and brought a lot to the table. So, you know, we want to be more active even on Twitter with interactions and things like that. So,
okay.
Anyway,
well, don't get too interactive. People realize what an ass you are. But that's okay. Maybe that'll endear you to them the way it has me. Mark, big shout out for this season. We'll be talking more in the off season. You got to come over here enjoy Studio 76 when you're not forced to get on the radio. We'll do some off-season stuff, I'm sure, maybe some real get-togethers and things.
Sure.
But I appreciate you calling in and appreciate everything you've done, man. You take care, okay?
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me on, man.
Take care, Mark.
Take care. See you.
Mark Cook of PewterReport.com. I want to thank you guys for listening to us all year, listening to us for the last 11 years. Nuck Nuck definitely needs to be more active on his Twitter. I'll tell Mark that. And I agree, Ren. I think you can definitely tell the different tones. And you can tell that with other guys that have multiple writers on their Twitter. You can tell the tonal differences, which is fine. I don't have an issue with that. But all right, big shout out to you guys for listening to us. We'll let you know how we're going to handle things in the offseason as soon as we know how we're going to handle things in the offseason. Continue to interact with us on Twitter at WhatTheBuck, on Facebook, facebook.com/WhatTheBuck. Would really appreciate it if you guys would go to the website and check out the articles our guys are putting out. I think they're putting out some really quality stuff. And I think, to be honest, there is an absence of that in a lot of areas, and I'm very proud of what they're doing. So we'd love to get some of your feedback on that and continue to improve that. A huge shout out to Cheryl and all of our crew on What the Buck Really Matters and things they're doing. A big reminder, April 22nd, River Hills Country Club here in Valrico, Florida, will be the golf tournament. So if you have any questions, it's the third annual Trunk Slammers Invitational. No, you do not have to be invited, or I have just invited you. We'll have all those details up on the web. Follow us to get all the details. We'll harass you constantly. If you do not sign up, find out if your companies can sign up and sponsor us. We whore out at a level that even we are embarrassed about for this golf tournament. It is a crap load of work, but we put on a spectacular event, and I'm not afraid to say that. We'd love to have you guys out here. Fly down. Stay for the weekend. I'll put you up at my house. No, I won't. That's a lie. We'll get some tents. It'll be wonderful. So for our crew at the tailgates, thank you. For Steve, our DJ, for Franco with the anthem and my intro and my outro, Shaunicia with the amazing fried chicken this week. Who am I leaving out? I think I covered everyone. I've covered our crew and everyone. We will continue to talk to you guys throughout the season and pay heed to what Stephen Holder said, guys. Hold people to a standard that matches what I think we all want, right? Don't get drawn in by the bullshit. So we'll see you guys next time. I'm going to try and play the outro, and I'm going to get up out of here.
Yeah, yeah, school, school, yeah, 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 yeah. Bugs Bunny, man, I think that's all, folks. My man Oaks just shut down another show. Same day, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, don't need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him old school. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.